This is Radio MD COVID-19 Daily, your source for COVID-19 news from the front lines of healthcare. I'm Caitlin White. Another week down, it's Friday, May 15th. Later in our episode, we hear about how COVID-19 is affecting society and culture at large. And why does it seem like everyone is baking bread all of a sudden? And our healthcare hero is in Missouri and tells us a bit about her work today. But first, our news. I'm finally starting to feel some weather that reminds me that warmer days are just around the corner. But with COVID-19 happening, no one really knows what summer will look like. The authors of a recent study published by the Canadian Medical Association Journal asked whether geographical and meteorological factors play a part in curtailing the pandemic, including things like latitude, temperature, and humidity. They concluded that the spread of the virus is not associated with temperature. One of the authors of the study, Professor Diane Gesnick, says, "Summer is not going to make this go away. It's important people know that. On the other hand, the more public health interventions an area had in place, the bigger the impact on slowing the epidemic growth. These public health interventions are really important because they're the only thing working right now to slow the epidemic." A few days ago, we ran a story about how a coronavirus baby boom probably won't be happening. And maybe this is another reason for that. Pornography is booming during the pandemic. I mean, it's Friday. Why not do this story, right? This is according to The Economist, who reported that last month, traffic on Pornhub, one of the biggest online sites, was up by 22% compared with March. The article says the pandemic is not only increasing consumption, it's expanding and diversifying its workforce. Many of those changes prompted by social distancing rules. Restrictions have stopped filming at most production companies, leading studios to edit and release backlogged footage. And many are now sending professional cameras and lighting rigs to actors who live together and can therefore film themselves at home. Lockdowns are also encouraging efforts by freelancers and smaller firms, too, with many stars turning to subscription-based services like OnlyFans. On to our healthcare hero, Elizabeth Ellison is a service line specialist at the University of Missouri Healthcare's Medical Intensive Care Unit at University Hospital in Columbia. I chatted with her about the challenges she's faced and what she's learned during this crisis. Sure. Let's start, of course, with some of the challenges of managing COVID-19 ICU patients. Tell us a bit about your experience on the front lines.
Sure. So the challenges, I think, first and foremost, of course, the clinical challenges we face with not really sure what we're dealing with, what we're working with. We know how to handle patients that have ARDS or pneumonia or other maybe down the line complications of COVID-19, but we're not, especially when this all started back in February and March, we weren't quite sure what we were up against. And so that was really scary at times and just unnerving, I think is the word that comes to mind, because you didn't know really where you stood. And I think everyone at my organization and in my unit wanted to be safe and wanted to be cautious. But then you also have this like beautiful balance of making sure that you're taking all of the necessary precautions, but also not completely disrupting your workflow. So that was a huge challenge, because we, despite I think potentially what most outsiders might think, there is sort of this ebb and flow, this process, a normal, what we would say, for working in the ICU. But when all of this came out, there was no, for a little bit, there was no normal. We kind of have a new normal now, and we're adjusting to that and trying to be really flexible. But there was definitely a couple weeks where we were just trying to figure out, you know, what are we dealing with and how do we keep ourselves safe while also maintaining a little bit of what we had before.
How have you and your team been managing fears and concerns for caring for the sickest of COVID-19 patients? How are you just maintaining positivity through all of this?
Yeah, that is such a great question, because I think it's important to validate people who are afraid or feel uncomfortable. Those are all really normal responses to something like a global pandemic. And so one way that we tried to respond is just by standing with our staff and being really supportive of the fact that A lot of these people have families at home, maybe little ones or even elderly parents. And we knew that those groups were being affected potentially more than the general population. So first and foremost, support and validation. But then we have had such a tremendous outpouring of love and kindness and goodness from our community, from people feeding us to a lot of people at home have made masks and are donating all of these different little like mask holders and headbands and even homemade masks, which is really fun, to the letters and cards and the different kind of positive, just little notes and homemade pictures and all of those things, I think, have been able to help a lot of us overcome the like anxiety and the fears and realize, you know, we aren't in this alone. We have an entire community. All of our neighbors are behind us, supporting us as we do this.
I know it still may be hard to see as we're in the midst of fighting the coronavirus, but what have you learned while caring for these patients?
Gosh, I've learned for myself, and I think I speak for a lot of ICU nurses, a lot of us are kind of type A because you're managing these really complex patients and the drips and the machines. And so I've really had to learn to be a little bit potentially more flexible and adaptable, applying the knowledge that I have and had prior to COVID-19 to what we know, but also sort of being flexible. Each day would bring a new process change or, okay, you know, I know we did this last week this way, but there's new information coming out from the CDC or World Health Organization or from our own institution. And so being really flexible and just trying to go with the flow more so potentially than I have done in the past. So that's probably one big thing that I've learned. And I think on top of that, again, like I said about the outpouring of support from our community, just really realizing that healthcare, while it's its own industry, we're not in some bubble where we're separated from everybody else. There's a whole group of people that's rallying us on, whether it's people at home, our loved ones, or just random people in the community that know we're taking care of these patients or we're feeling the downstream effect of this pandemic. And that's been just really, really heartwarming, knowing that we're not siloed, we're not by ourselves in this fight.
Well, I know today is your day off, so I'll let you go. But is there anything else you want to add?
Really, I'm just so, I think the big thing that I want to add is I'm really proud of where I work. I'm so proud of the nurses and physicians and therapists and housekeepers and all of these people that, you know, I think there are quite obviously big negative effects of this pandemic and what that's going to mean for our community now and even down the road. But in some way, there's some silver lining in the fact that definitely as healthcare workers, I think we've really banded together and we're all on the same team. And I'm just so impressed with the people that I work with day in and day out. I mean, I knew that they were amazing, but definitely during this pandemic, it reaffirms everything that I think I already knew, but I just get to see on a day-to-day basis, people that are holding iPads up so patients and families can communicate. People are going the extra step, physicians who are spending a lot of time on the phone, making sure families understand what's going on and how they're going to, you know, handle their next course of action. And so just a really big shout out to my team, but then also all of those healthcare teams across the nation. It's been really humbling to be one small part of that huge piece that's happening.
Everyone is getting a bit bored in quarantine. But isn't it kind of funny that we're all drawn towards doing the same type of activities? I feel like everyone in my social feeds is baking bread, baking anything, doing puzzles, and like the same five other hobbies. Here with more about why that might be and some other ways culture and social interactions are changing because of COVID-19 is Dr. Henry Munka, a neuroscientist and CEO of Posit Science. Okay, so I had a few questions on all the hobbies we've been seeing people doing, and I wanted to know if there was some kind of like weird psychological reason. I guess, so here's my first, is Everyone on my social feeds is baking bread, it feels like, including my boyfriend, who is like out of nowhere wanted to like start his own sourdough starter.
Right.
How boyfriend. I know, right? Well, we're still like, you know, it's getting there. Like, but I mean, that's one of the biggest ones. Why do you think there was this like strong urge for everyone to like immediately start baking and being like domestic?
Well, there's probably two things that are going on. You mentioned psychology, and you know, I'll talk briefly about the psychology, but maybe more about the neurology, the neuroscience. You know, I think the psychology on some of this is pretty straightforward, and I'm sure you've guessed it already, which is, hey, we're all a little bit nervous about the future and nervous about going to the grocery store, and I think it's a natural thing that all humans do at that point to try and lay in supplies and make sure we're gonna ride this out one way or the other. You know, the neuroscience of it is kind of interesting as well, which is, you know, underneath the psychology of, you know, what psychologists would call drives and so forth. I think the brain has a certain desire to maintain a certain amount of activity that's going on in it, I guess is how I'd put it. And, you know, normally when we're out and about and we're working and we're seeing our friends and we can go and, you know, go out to shows or museums or hobbies or what have you, and our brain gets all kinds of stimulation and all kinds of input. And often what that means then is when we come home, you know, we're ready for some downtime, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Hang out, watch a show on Netflix, maybe read a book, go to bed. But now we're all stuck in quarantine. And so our brain is not getting that kind of regular stimulation and input that it's getting all the time. And for most people, there's kind of a somewhat healthy response to that, which is, okay, the brain wants to seek out that stimulation now to make up for what it's not getting. And that kind of manifests as a drive to, well, engage in, do learning and do things to fill that need in that way. So you see people, you know, like I say, I see quite a lot of bread breakers in my Twitter and Instagram feed right now, but really all kinds of things, whether it's keeping up with things at the house or, you know, picking out a guitar out of the closet that maybe hasn't been used in a while or all things like that. And in that sense, it's because the brain craves stimulation and is trying to make up for what it's missing, I think.
I guess this is more of an existential question, but do you think maybe after all of this, we'll see people just like kind of having more hobbies? Or you think we'll just go back to our life where we, you know, stay busy and the guitar goes away and the bread, we end up buying it again. And, you know, life resumes, quote unquote, normalcy after.
You know, I think the crisis is going to drive some subtle but long lasting changes in kind of how we interact and how our brains work and how we do things. And it's easy in the middle of it to maybe overestimate those changes. So if you think back to another kind of national tragedy we endured, 9/11, I think there was this period of time where we thought, well, we'll never have a political disagreement again, right? Because we're all going to be united. And you know, that lasted for a short period of time, I guess. And then it was back to business as usual. But, you know, of course, 9/11 did drive some very long-lasting changes of other natures and kinds of how we live and work, right? You know, we, you know, deeply changed how we engaged in air travel, for example. And we deeply changed the amount of, you know, surveillance that we were willing to put up with in ourselves in the spirit of keeping ourselves safe. And I have to think the COVID crisis is going to have some subtle but long-lasting effects like that as well, in terms of our brains and how we want to use them and so forth. I wish I could believe as easily that we're all going to become, you know, merry little bakers and sort of live in our cottages and become self-sufficient. That might be kind of, that's probably not really going to be the case. But I, you know, I do think we're going to see some longer lasting effects around social distancing, just because that's going to become a feature of our society. And, you know, how we interact with people when we are wearing masks in a casual going forward. You know, our brains are used to having a huge set of input around social cues when we're talking to people and around when we're doing work together, and how we'll be able to build the same levels of trust and companionship when our little monkey brains are not seeing people's whole faces and seeing their smiles and expressions. I think that's going to have some effects on how we live and work together.
That is really interesting, because like, my big activity right now is just going on a walk, you know, around my neighborhood. And, you know, you do when you're just out in public, you run into people that you don't know just on the street. And in my mind, I still like smile and kind of do the like, you know, I'm just going to go over here. But then I realize after I've passed that like they can't see it. I have sunglasses on. So I like have no emotion or no expression walking down the street for anyone else.
Yeah. And I think any functioning society is built on, you know, high levels of interpersonal trust. You know, we trust that someone, a stranger even, that we meet in the street is going to do the right thing and treat us well. Mm. And we trust that the people we work together are going to honor their word and act ethically and so forth. And we built that trust through a certain, you know, set of standardized social interactions that we've built over, you know, decades or hundreds of years, really, in terms of how our you know, and you mentioned a good one there. Right now, it's appropriate during the time of coronavirus, if you start to come across someone on the street, if it's not too busy, to, you know, cross the street or walk in the middle of the street to avoid them. You know, 6 months ago, if you did that to someone, they would very legitimately feel insulted that you saw them as a threat and didn't want to interact with them. So the question that I wonder about is, are we going to be able to have a level of trust in each other that allows us to avoid each other like that? Or as a society, because we're avoiding each other more, are we going to have to just deal with a lower level of overall trust between people, which is going to have a lot of other kind of knock-on consequences? It's an interesting time.
That is fascinating.
Evolve some new ways to understand the good intentions that most of us have to each other, so we'll be able to return to those levels of trust and positive social interactions, even if we're masked and staying apart from each other a bit.
Do you have an opinion on the handshake debate, whether or not we should keep doing it, I guess, post-COVID?
No, it's, you know, really, I'm with Anthony Fauci on this one. I suppose we've all read the Wikipedia page on the history of handshakes, and I get the idea once upon a time to show that we weren't carrying daggers around with us from place to place. We had an open hand of friendship, but you know, of all the things I think we can put up with to stop the spread of this terrible disease, that seems like the easiest one. And again, as a neuroscientist then, and as a someone like you who's interested in culture and its evolution, I wonder, well, what's going to start to take the place of that? Because I think as social primates, if I may put it that way, you know, we have an instinctive neurological, biological, psychological need to have those social exchanges to establish trust and good faith. But we'll have to build something that can take the place of skin-to-skin contact in that way. So maybe we'll import a culture, right? Maybe we'll all start bowing to each other a little bit. Mm. Or maybe we'll invent something new. Maybe those elbow bumps with long sleeve shirts are really going to become a thing. So something will happen. I can't imagine that, again, as a group of primates that has succeeded in the world by working together, you know, we're going to have some kind of exchange like that that's going to indicate our good faith towards each other. But it seems like it should change, and it will change.
It's so fascinating because so much of my day-to-day doing this podcast is, you know, all the nitty-gritty, obviously, of the medical aspect and what happens when we open up and how many people are getting sick and those numbers. But there is this whole other side that is truly changing so much more than just like our healthcare system. It's these other things that aren't as tangible.
Yeah, it is really interesting to me. You know, I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm not a virologist. I tend to leave that to the experts. And, the general belief is, hey, we should largely do what they and some input from the economists tell us what to do. But I think it is interesting, again, as a neuroscientist, as someone who's interested in these kinds of cultural issues, to say, you know, hey, what shifts are we going to start to have in human interactions that are, you know, almost even difficult to foresee? I mean, again, who would have seen after 9/11 that we would no longer be able to bring a can of soda on an airplane? Go back and look at the sequence of events of that. Arguably, it kind of made sense. And so it does seem like we're going to see these results of COVID as well. Now, maybe what will happen is we'll get a wonderful vaccine, even if it's not in the next month or so, but let's say in the next year or two. And if it becomes really manageable like that, you know, maybe it's back to, European kisses on the cheek and everything. You know, one thing sometimes that science fiction authors and other futurologists say is that we tend to, in the short term, we overestimate changes. We think things are change quicker and more permanently than they actually do. But in the long term, then we underestimate changes. We're not able to quite see how different things are really going to be 10 or 20 years as a result of these sorts of things. So maybe you and I will be having this conversation 18 months from now, and there'll have been a vaccine and everything will be more back to normal than we could have hoped for right now. Oh, that would be a wonderful thing, wouldn't it?
I hope so. I know there's only so much bread I can bake, you know?
Hopefully you can put your boyfriend in charge of that. And then we're engaged in something else useful.
I've started pickling onions and I'm just like filling my Laura Ingalls Wilder fantasy. Like,
wow, that is pretty hardcore. I'm impressed.
It fills the days, you know? Oh my gosh. Well, Dr. Vanka, thank you again for, you know, just a little lightheartedness and some levity during all this. I appreciate all your time and introspect.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. And, you know, between the bread and the pickled onions, I think you're going to be in pretty good shape or within your
household. Killing it, you know? I mean. Been Radio MD COVID-19 Daily. Tell us about your weekend plans or send us someone you'd like us to feature on the podcast at COVID19Daily@RadioMD.com. That's COVID19Daily@RadioMD.com. Enjoy your weekend as much as you can from home and join us again Monday. I'm Caitlin White. Stay home and stay healthy.